Okay, good morning to everyone. It's been a long time in any event. So I want to dedicate this year this morning to Mrs. Rose Orlinsky, Henry's mother, Alaa Shalom, who died just a few days ago, was buried in Eretz Yisrael this past Erev Shabbos. Henry does so much to disseminate Torah. He's responsible, really, for the online and the CDs and all the Harbatas Torah. He does should be zchus for both his parents. I want to start today as a preview of what we'll do next year, called loosely Medrash U'Mikra, Medrash and the Torah, and look at the Seder of the week in the light of the Midrashim. Many of the Midrashim, many of Rashi's commentaries are drawn from the Medrash Rabbah. And Rashi, as he says in the Perek Gimel of Bereishis, he tries to find a Medrash which is most apt for the interpretation, the simple interpretation of the pasuk. Midrashim generally are not as people understand them. You know, people see that the stories, embellishments, sometimes with vivid details, as if it's trying to embellish the basic narrative of the Torah. Midrash really comes to deepen our understanding of Torah, and especially to give us an insight into the ideas and the values of Torah. Very often the story beneath the story. And you'll find, of course, occasionally when there's a machlokas amongst the Midrashim in a particular point, it's not a dispute in the facts, you know. Some say he was this tall, some say he was that tall, but rather each are presenting a different idea. And therefore the study of the Medrash really is in many cases a forensic study. It involves trying to unravel the mysteries, the enigma, the riddles that Chazal implanted in their commentary on the Torah. The Pasuk says in Mishlei, Divrei Chachamim V'chidosom, to understand the mashal, the parable, the melitza, the riddle, the words of the sages and their puzzles, so that requires thought. It's not necessarily the most obvious, but I think it's a very enjoyable experience. We have to exercise our minds in order to really understand what the Midrashim and understand it not on the superficial level with which they become popular, but on a much deeper level as well. So let's look this week at Parshas Balak, which is a Sedra this coming Shabbos. I chose a few of the Midrashim, not so much at random, but more or less. And you know, it's because it's these are riddles, they're enigmas, it's meant to be a little more interactive than it usually is, where you do all the talking. So here, we'll try to understand each puzzle. What exactly was Chazal trying to teach us? Let's look at the first one. The basic story, we know Balak hires Bilam in order to curse the Jewish people. And instead of cursing him, despite the best efforts of Balak, Bilam really blesses them. That's the superficial story. Understand, what's a curse? What's a blessing? Who cares? Why is it important to us? What underlies the story? What type of people are we talking about here? What was their ultimate goal? Pasuk says, this is in Parakhov Pasuk Yud Ches, Vaya'an Bilam Vayomer. Bilam is resistant after God comes to him and tells him not to curse the Jews. Bilam says to Balak, Imi Teli Valak Melove So Kesev Izahav. If Bilam would give Balak all the money in the world, a house full of silver and gold, Lo Chalavor Espi Hashem Elokai, I would not be able to violate the word of my God. Bilam, always a Rasha, but now he's a from Rasha. Hashem Elokai, my God. Mikan Atlamates. Now the Medrash continues, and here the Medrash quotes the Mishnah on the fifth parak of Shabbos. There the Mishnah says, Shehoyuba Shlosha Drachim. Bilam had three different qualities. So this Mishnah is actually familiar to us, because it contrasts the qualities of Bilam and the qualities of Avram Avinu. So it's in the fifth parak of Avos, which by chance we read this past Shabbos. And the Mishnah says as follows. Anyone who has these three traits is among the disciples of Avram. The other three are Tamid of Bilam Rasha. Now, the Medrash here actually omits any reference to Avram Avinu explicitly, but we understand both what Bilam is and what Avram is through the descriptions here. What are the traits of the Talmidim of Avram Avinu? The Mishnah says, Ayin Tova, a good eye, Ruach Nemucha, a humble spirit, V'nefesh Shefala, and a lowly soul. Those are Talmidim from Avram Avinu. But Bilam's Talmidim, and here we go back to the text, it's the Mishnah as well, Ayin Ra'a, an evil eye, V'ruach Gvoha, a haughty spirit, v'nefesh rechava, and a greedy soul. Ayin ra dechsev vayisav v'lam aseinav vayaris yisrael shachin l'shvatav. He had an ayin ra because he lifted his eyes and he saw the Jewish people dwelling in their tribal formations. Why that necessarily implies an ayin ra, we have to think about. Next, ruach gvoha. How do we know that he had a haughty spirit? Dichsiv, ki me'ein Hashem l'siti l'alochim achem. God is not letting me go with you. All right, that's pretty straightforward. God is not letting him, meaning he boasted of the fact that God came to him in prophecy and told him. Nefesh rechava is this pasuk that he had a greedy soul. Dichsiv, imitein li valok malov eso kesev ezahav. If only Balak gives me a house filled with silver and gold, then something might happen. Meaning, ilu hoye mevakesh l'skor lo chayalos lilochem kenegdon, if Balak would hire mercenaries, soldiers, to fight against the Jewish people, because he had just saw the end of last week's Sedra, Sichon and Og were killed by the forces of Israel. If you would hire soldiers, safek notzchim, safek noflim, they might win, they might lose. Chances are they lose, because you see the Jewish people are in a good run. Lo dai sheitenkach v'notzeach. Therefore, if you would give me this, then you would certainly succeed. Holomanata shekach bikesh. You see, for me, that's what he was asking for. That even if Balak would give me a house filled with silver and gold, even if means that's the area of his real desire. Well, what are these traits? The Ayin Tova, the Ruach Nemucha, the Nefesh Shefala. So I heard from my Rebbe, Rabbi Chait, many years ago, and the truth is we spent almost 3 or 4 days on this one Mishnah. They're so filled with ideas about values and about Jewish life. Ayin Tova, the Rambam says, is Midas HaHistapkus. It's satisfaction. Satisfaction with what one has. Especially the material realm. Ayin Tova means you look at everything with a good eye. You're not jealous of anyone else. You're satisfied with what you have. Are there people in our world who have money and they walk away from a good investment because they say, nah, I have enough. I don't need any more. No. You say no. You don't know anyone like that. There was a person like that. Avraham Avinu. That's the Ayin Tova. Ayin Tova means I have enough. I have enough to do whatever I want to do. So, exactly. So why do I need more? That's an Ayin Tova. A Ruach Nemucha is humility. Nefesh Shefala is in terms of desire. Rambam says, Zahiris Menataiva. A person is careful not to embrace too many desires in a word or two. It's called self-control. Self-control. A person is able to control his or her intake of desires. Bilam was exactly the opposite. Now, if you think of what Bilam was, it recalls another Mishnah in Avos. Hakina hataiva v'hakavod motzines adam in olam. So look, what's Ayin Ra? Ayin Ra is an insatiable desire for wealth. Ayin Ra. Unfortunately, it's not a very uncommon thing. People are jealous. They look at what someone has, and it bothers them more what they don't have, or I should say it a different way, it bothers them more if someone else has something they want than the fact that they don't have it. In other words, they judge their the value of their possessions. Said a different way, the barometer of their happiness is what others have, vis-a-vis what they have. And that is a horrible way to live. Ruach nemuch, ruach gevoha, the haughty spirit, of course, is kavod, the desire for honor. Person who has an insatiable desire for honor, it will never be met. What does it take to burst that balloon of honor? If 1,000 people pay you honor and one doesn't, little dash of reality is very, very painful. And taiva, beth nefesh rechava, the soul that seeks pleasure, that sustains itself based on pleasure, and of course in the Mishnah that's taiva. Hakina, hatava, vehakavod, motzi nes adam mina olam. Those three, if a person is using those three traits as his guiding principles in life, that person is going to have an exceedingly difficult time in life, a very, very painful existence. Right. Actually, Rabbi Chait said, what's gaiva really? Well, how do we define arrogance? There's actually a very simple definition of arrogance. It's the difference between what one is and how one perceives himself. Because an anov is a person who lives in reality. That's Moshe's anov me'od, mikol ha'odam asher al p'nei adamah. Moshe is the most humble of people. Not that he thought he was nothing. On the contrary, vis-a-vis God, in terms of reality, he understood his true nature. But he never had an inflated sense of his own nature. To have a ruach gvoha, to have gaiva, means that there's a gulf between how a person perceives himself and the reality. You know, too often we can encourage that in our children as well, that chasm that exists between their real qualities and what we try to tell them that they are. At a certain level, you have to try to build up children to seek beyond themselves, to try to extend their capabilities, to keep them somewhat ambitious. At a certain point, though, they have to be grounded in reality. It's better, you know, they be grounded in reality before they get to college or before they go into the workforce. It's a rude awakening. Correct. There's a cartoon from the Wall Street Journal to keep on my refrigerator that has a young person going for his first job interview and hands his resume. And the employer says to him, "You realize now that all those years your parents told you you're special, it's ridiculous. That's basically the caption. And those things have no meaning in the real world. Not everybody is special. Everybody's unique, but not everybody is special. To foster that is to foster a tragic existence. And ruach nefesh rechava is to have a big appetite. And you see that Bilam, like many Balei Gaiva, many arrogant people, had prodigious appetites as well. In terms of women, even Chazal say he was a pederast with his donkey, and more. What did he advise? He advised Balak to use nus, promiscuity, in order to ensnare the Jewish people. What he tried to do, and this was the plan, and at the end of the Seder it worked, to get the Jews involved in znus and in immorality, and that would take away their energy from Torah and Avodas Hashem, and that really is the weakness that he tried to uncover. It's interesting, as Chazal and the Medrash are defining Bilam's personality, what does it tell us about him? Ein ra, ruach gvoha, nefesh rechava, and the fact that the Mishnah says that these are the Talmidim shel Bilam HaRasha. Who says Bilam has Talmidim? Right. Who are the disciples of Bilam? Well, truth be told, Bilam has many more disciples than Avram Avinu has. When we speak in terms of disciples, we mean a derech hachayim, a way of life. Bilam's way of life is very prevalent in the world. And based on what we see here, the Ayin Ra, the Ruach Gvoha, Nefesh Rechava, a person who defines success, ultimate success, by money or pleasure or conquests or honor, that's the Talmidim of Bilam HaRasha. Are the people who define success by those measures? Absolutely. It may be a more common metric of success than that of the Talmidim of Avram Avinu. And worse than that is that Bilam's approach is to use his wisdom in order to attain it, and that is the ultimate corruption. You see here the Mishnah, and in a number of Midrashim we'll encounter, Chazal contrasted Bilam and Avram, Bilam and the Avos. And that's because they each represent different ways of looking at the world. There's a way of looking at the world in which a person is grounded in the reality of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and the other way of looking at the world is to be grounded in the reality of oneself. If a person looks at the world only as, you know, a very anthrocentric, not only anthrocentric, he sees himself as the center of the universe, that person will run into problems. He'll become a Bilam, or at the very least, he'll become a disciple of Bilam. And note the haughtiness, because then if God talked to him, it just reinforced to Bilam that he has these special qualities, and therefore, lo dai sheyitein kach v'notzeach. If only I get this, then I will be successful. Next point, which is a similar idea, just makes the next point. The pasuk says, it's a few psukim later, in number 2 in the handout before us. V'aches hadavar asher adaber elecha osos haseh. Bilam says to Balak, whatever I tell you, that's what you should do. Just do that. Lamedcha shebehasra halach. It teaches us that Bilam went and he had already been warned. God exactly told him what had to be done. Miyad vayashkem. He got up early the next morning. As the pasuk says, vayokam Bilam baboker. Bilam got up early the next morning. Vayachavoshes asano. He saddled his own donkey and on. Amar lakadosh baruch. The Medrash says, miyad vayashkem. Kodam ve'omad bezrizos hu ba'atzmo. He right away rose, and bezrizos, with alacrity, enthusiasm, he himself saddled his donkey. Amar lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Rasha, Kvar Kadamcha Avraham, Aviyam, Lakodes Yitzhak Beno, Avraham, Rasha, evil one, Avraham already preceded you. And when he went to the Akedah, he saddled his own donkey as well. So both of these are unusual. Rashi, I think, quotes this here also. And there too, in Parshas Vayera, and Chazal explained the two things. So Ahava Mekalkel Zashura and Hasina Mekalkel Zashura. The person is madly in love, then he loses his equilibrium, stops thinking rationally. So too, if a person is madly in hate, he's filled with hatred, which is even more common, then he stops thinking rationally as well. There are untold number of people who destroy themselves more, I think, because sinna vitiates their intellects and deprives them of the mechanism whereby they can think clearly, than does love. Love does it also in a different sense, but I guess you find that in the world too. People stop thinking and they engage in self-destructive behavior because love, or love related to taiva, that's a different issue. But sinna, certainly. What's the point, though, the Medrash is making here? That we see, Vayokam Bilam Baboker, he got up early, and so did Avram get up early. What's the comparison? They both got up early. And the answer is that both represented two choices. People have two choices to make in life. Bilam and Avram represent diametrically opposite lifestyles. And notice, here's the point. Vayokam means they both arose with enthusiasm, with eagerness. What's the difference between them? Right, but hu ba'atzmo. Ba'atzmo means he did it to serve himself. He was self-serving, all right? Why'd Avram do it? Lakodes Yitzchak Beno. You know, that was the opposite of self-serving, because it was counter to the interests of Avram. Avram did it just to serve Hashem, all right? Because you could say that, look, even Bilam was told by God, okay, go, But whatever he tells you to do, I'll tell you what to do. Don't listen to him. So he was also following Tzivoy Hashem, but he followed the Tzivoy Hashem as a self-serving act. Avram followed the Tzivoy Hashem as a God-serving act, and therein lies the difference. And here's the question, like Raz, you intimated, are we as enthusiastic in mitzvahs as others are in averos, or others are in pursuit of taiva? All right? That's a question. That's a challenge to all of us. I was at the airport early last Sunday morning to fly down to Florida. I mean, it's shocking to see, first of all, how many people are on the road, all right, at 5 in the morning. I had people on the airport at 5:30 in the morning, but they're going on some pleasure trip, okay? There are many people in the world who find it hard to get up early in the morning to daven or to learn, and yet there are many other people in the world who don't find it very hard at all to go to the golf course early in the morning or go to the gym early in the morning. It all depends on what one's desires are, what animates a person's lifestyle choices. Is it the service of the self, or is it the service of HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Those are two different things, but that's the implicit idea in the Medrash. We have to understand that Zrizus is not limited to the Jewish people. It's not limited to the Jewish people. Zrizus is a general quality that people will attach to whatever they value in life. Ashreinu, happy are we, happy is anyone whose Zrizus is directed at service of Hashem and not service of the self. It's interesting that there are those types of qualities that we assume are good and exclusive to us, but they're not necessarily so. We look at Zrizus is one, Mysterious Nefesh is another. It's not quite the same, but we've addressed in the past the Muslims are mostly Nefesh for their faith. There's no doubt about that, in a very, very destructive way. The difference is, when we're Moser Nefesh, it's purely for Hashem, because we realize that it's not a self-serving act, all right? A sacrifice that a person has to make, can't seek it out, for sure, and that's the difference. They're really still serving themselves when they do it, all right? On some level, they think they're serving God too, but they're really serving themselves because of the expected reward that they're going to get. We don't see Mesiris Nefesh as that, but nonetheless, at its core, the concept is not limited to us, like Zrizus is not limited to us. It only depends on what pursuits one values. Okay. Well, Bilam goes on his way, and he's traveling along merrily. Vatera ha'asonis malach Hashem. His donkey saw the angel of God, nitzav baderech, becharbosh shlufa biyado. And the angel had his sword drawn, all right, whether to kill Bilam, to intimidate him, to stop him. But the pasuk says the angel drew his sword. Why the image? And Bilam is a prophecy here. Why the image of an angel with a sword? Why couldn't the angel just blow on him and he would die as a result? Elim Kain Sholach Harbo, it has to be that he removes his sword. Varek Sibisan Cherev, Vayetze Malach Hashem Yakeb Mechane Ashur. The Malach came and he smote the Assyrians, killed them all. I think it was 180,000 in one night when they laid siege to Yerushalayim. One of the events we commemorate on the night of the Seder. How did the Malach do it? Uchsiv. Different pasuk says, V'gam noshach b'hem chayayim. Then noshach b'hem, he blew on them, and their souls left them. That's how he killed them. So why then did the Malach here draw a sword instead of doing the same thing that was done with Sancheirav? Elakach amar lo. This is what the Malach said, and this is the point that the Medrash is making. The Malach said to Bilam, Hapeh nitan liYaakov. the mouth was given to Yaakov to use. Shenemar, Hakol Kol Yaakov, V'Hayodayim Midei Esav. The voice is the voice of Yaakov's, the hand in the hands of Esav. Uchsiv Achar B'Chotichye, Esav himself uses sword. V'Umos Kulo Macher Chayehem. And the nations of the world live by the sword, right? That's not our expression. Those who live by the sword die by the sword. That didn't come from a Jewish source. V'Atot Tachalif Umanuscha V'Tavar Lehem B'Shelahem. And you're going to exchange your tactics, the sword, for their tactics, the voice, because Bilam's intention was to be Mekalel, uses Peh. Afani Avo Alecha B'Shelcha. Therefore, so too I will come upon you with your weapon of choice, your usual weapon of choice, L'kach Ksiv V'Charbo Shlufa B'Yado, with the sword drawn. That's how the Malach confronted Bilam. What's the point? All right, again, these are the questions we ask. We could, a lot of people just look at the Medrash and say, okay, it's a nice, yeah, it's a nice idea, but what's the point of the Medrash? So I think the understanding is that the power of the Jewish people is in Torah and Tefillah. That's our real power, because that is our connection to Hashem. If our only tactic, if our only game plan is to fight army versus army, we lose. In other words, if the Jewish people are confronted with danger, and the only way we seek to avert the danger is through physical means, then we are heading for catastrophe. And you see even the story at the beginning of Vayishlach and Yaakov Avinu prepared for the confrontation with Esav. He prepared in three ways: Doron, gifts, bribes to appeal to his to him psychologically; Milchama, prepared to defend himself, that's indispensable; and Tefillah, to be Mespal, which is Mespal, he prayed to Hashem. When the non-Jews use our umanus, our tactics, meaning our relationship with God that's founded on intellectual and spiritual communion, then we suffer from that, even if their approach borrows from ours and distorts ours. There's a Gemara says at the end of Brachos, you don't find it in the text of the Gemara, but the Ein Yaakov has it, that a ganav, if he prays to God when he's about to burglarize someone's house, God listens to his tefillah also. Imagine that. How is it possible to pray for something and, you know, and have God listen to that tefillah, where the tefillah, the prayer itself, is designed to accomplish something which is antithetical to God's will? And the answer is that tefillah is a connection to God. And that connection to God, sincerely made, even if formed improperly or founded on pursuit of the illicit, nonetheless, that relationship still exists. That connection is made, and that connection is very difficult to undo. I once mentioned, I think I mentioned the shul a couple of years ago, I was in Israel during the summertime, it was Ramadan, and I happened to turn on Saudi Arabian television, and I was watching the Ramadan service at the great mosque in Mecca. It didn't sound good for the Jews, whatever they were saying. No Jew, you know, can't take any comfort from it. But here's the thing, you had tens of thousands of people in the mosque, and not a sound was made until, except in prayer. They're up and down, they're chanting whatever it is they're chanting, and nobody's talking to each other. And no one is running around, and no one's running out into the hall, and no one is going to have a drink. That's a difference in approach. That's like using our humanus against us. I don't know if I subscribe to it, but I know the Rabbanim and Aristotle have said that's why they're successful these days. And they're nefarious and brutal ways. That's why they're successful, because they're praying, and they're praying with sincerity. This is the point of the Medrash. If the enemy begins to use our umanus, then it has to be countered. Bilam's nevuah has to be countered with our umanus. We have to respond to them with a sword as well. But the angel comes to Bilam and says, "This is your umanus, all right," and he challenges him with it. Because the deadliest combination would be if the non-Jews had both the cherev and the tefillah. If they have both, that is a very difficult combination to overcome. Bilaam's nevuah, and now we'll understand it a little deeper. His the blessing, the cursing of Israel, was not just stam words. What Bill was trying to do prophetically was to search out the worst elements of Klal Yisrael, the weakest elements of Klal Yisrael, and expose them, and that would be our vulnerability to Balak. You see, it almost sounds like a cartoon, this story, like a movie that you know how it's going to end. But Balak was no fool. Balak knew exactly what he was confronting. The Jewish people were heading to his homeland, and he knew from the experience of Sichon and Og that he could not attack them frontally, nor could he defend himself against the Jewish people's attack. What he had to therefore do was find some other mechanism, some weakness in the Jewish people that would allow him to exploit and therefore protect himself, and that really would be Bilaam's curse. The curse would be, not a curse that if he cursed them it had any effect, it had no effect. The curse is that Bilaam would be able to see exactly these are the weaknesses. And you see, by the way, from Bilaam's bracha, exactly what he saw the weaknesses are, right? If our family structures are not stable, if the shuls are not holy, if we're not living on a moral level, we don't live with integrity, etc. If Balak was able to seduce us away from those high standards, then undoubtedly his military ventures will be more successful. So the question is, from where do these weaknesses come? How was he able to see them? What was he looking at? So yeah, very interesting medrash. Number four. Vatera ha'asom es malach Hashem, vatilochet el akir, vayosef malach Hashem avor. And the donkey saw, Bilaam could not see, but the donkey saw the malach Hashem, vatilochet el akir, and he pushed towards the wall, he was pressed against the wall, vayosef malach Hashem avor, and the malach began to pass over and over, vayamod, he stood. And then again, then Bilaam hit him, and the Ason kept going, and the Malach stopped him again, and then he knocked Bilaam's leg into the wall. Medrash says, "Ma ro lekadamo shalosh pamim ad shalo niralo." Why did the Malach send the donkey into three different areas and have him stop three times? So the Medrash says that he wanted to show him Mara Olakadmo Shalosh Oshalo Nirolo Simonim Shel Avos. He was showing him by the three, the grouping of three, signs of our fathers. Herolo. Simonim Shel Avos Herolo. Amadlo Barishono. When they first went, so then the path they were on, Hoya Revach Mikano Mikan. Okay, there was room to go on either side. There's still room. He was going on the Derech, right? Vatech Masodeh, and he had room to go. Vishnia, second time. He went to the field. The mouth stood in front of him, but he had room to maneuver on either side. The second time, Lo Yochlo Lozuz El Tzad Echad. He could only go on one side. Vayamod Malach Hashem Mishalach Kramim, right? Goder Mizeh. A fence on both sides. He was closed off on one. He had only one opening. Bashneya Lo Yochlo Zuz El Tzad Echad Tzad Echad. Bashlishis, the third time, Ein Derech Lentoshim in a small. That was a roadblock. Couldn't move at all. So what exactly were the simanim? Meho yu simanim aile sheilu bikesh. Malach was telling Bilaam, ilu bikesh lekal bonav shel Avram. If you want to curse the children of Avram Avinu, hayamotzi mikan umikan b'nei Yishmo b'nei Ketura. From the first time he stopped, he had room to go on either side. It means you couldn't go forward to Yitzchak, but Avram had these so-called weaknesses. The B'nai Yishmael on the one hand, and the B'nai Ketura on the other. V'kesh l'kalel B'nai Yitzchak. He wanted to curse the descendants of Yitzchak. So there's another weakness, one opening. Hayemotz v'tzadecha B'nai Esav, but yilchetz l'akir. Bonav shal Yaakov, lo matzo b'hem psolas liga b'hen. There you find no psul, l'kach nemer b'ashlishis, v'makom tsar ze Yaakov. Tichziv, Vayerem Hakol Vaod, Vayetzulo, same word is used. Asher Ein Derech Lentos Yaminu Smol, you can't veer to the right or to the left. Shomotzo Psoas Be'echod Mibanov. There is no, nothing invalidating any of the Shvatim. Shivteka, they are the basic building blocks of Israel. So both Avram and Yitzchak had Psul Bezaram, Yaakov did not. What does it mean? I think from one perspective it means that there are elements in the house of Avram and Yitzchak that really can be cursed. What are those elements? The B'nai Ishmael, the B'nai Keturah, the B'nai Esav. It means that in the former, in the those descendants of Avram and Yitzchak, not all of his offspring embraced the mission and the values of Avram Avinu. So therefore they represent a weakness in Avram and Yitzchak's world, but none in Yaakov. Yaakov is pure. He's Ishtom. From another perspective, it means that when we are to be cursed, it means because we are not heeding the derech of Yaakov, but rather the derech, the derachim, the ways, the approaches to life of Esav and Yishmael. There are relatives, all right? So they relate to us, and some of their deeds relate to us as well. The Gemara says in Avodah Zarah, Daf Beis Amud Beis, that the Bnei Esav, Bnei Yishmael asked Maksiv Bei, when God offered them the Torah, he wanted to know what's written in it, and each had certain aspects of the national character. Some were drawn to immorality, some were drawn to aggression, etc., whatever it was. When we abandon the way of Yaakov, meaning we sin, we're sinning using some of the mechanisms of Esav or Yishmael, or Bnei Keturah for that matter. The Bnei Keturah are the most exotic of the group. They went to the Far East, went to the Eretz Kedem, and they're monotheists in a sense. All right, they want to be good people. They have no known vice, but yet they don't relate directly to God nor to Avram Avinu. So if we want that type, I guess we call them today humanists. If they want the type of existence, just humanists focusing on the human being and nothing else, it's also a distortion. All these are potential distortions in the house of Yaakov. They all exist. What the Medrash says, we have to uproot it. That is to say, you shouldn't think that Bilam came to expose the weaknesses of Klal Yisrael and he didn't expose them because there are none. That we'd never say that. We have weaknesses. We have vulnerabilities. Those vulnerabilities emanate from our connections to Yishmael, to Esav, to Keturah, and to the world around us. If we're able to build a fence around ourselves, then we are better able to protect ourselves. There's no perfect insular, impermeable barrier, but nonetheless we are better able to protect ourselves. If we don't make the effort, though, we'll certainly stumble. When we don't stumble, though, then we're acting as the Bnei Yaakov, in whom there's no psolas. Next, here you have a very interesting medrash, very famous, because it's Rashi quotes it as well. Vatomer leBilam, so the piason, the mouth of the donkey, spoke, again, miraculously, and said to Bilam, Mel sisi lecha, he said, here, I've served you now for so many years, I'm your faithful donkey, what did I do to you that you would beat me these three times? Except the word used is regalim, not pe'amim. The simple pshat is shalosh regalim. It means shalosh pe'amim, three times. What's regalim? So Medrash says ramzalo. The allusion here is atana vakesh la'akor uma hachogeges shalosh regalim. You are trying to uproot a nation that celebrates the three festivals, the three pilgrimage festivals when we ascend to Yerushalayim. All right, it's a classic medrash. Because then Rashi says it here, so now you see, regalim is used, the people of the shalosh regalim, etc. But what in the world does it mean? Why is there a reference here to the shalosh regalim as opposed to any other mitzvah? We have other mitzvahs that are the three. Actually, we're exhausting our supply of three, because you had already three of us used, and I have three regalim. What other threes do we have? Maybe it? Okay, so what's the pshat? You see, Bilaam's goal was to detach the Jewish people from God, to sever us from God, that we shouldn't see ourselves as the Am Hashem, but as a regular people with ambitions and taivos and values that are drawn from ourselves and not from some objective source. What do the Gimel Regalim, the Shalosh Regalim, represent? The Shalosh Regalim, the three festivals of the year, testify to the unique relationship we have with God. So it's the antithesis of what Bilaam tried to do. Bilaam tried to say, you're not special. There's nothing unique about you. You now are being successful for reasons he can't quite articulate, but nonetheless, there's nothing inherent in you. And now comes in the mouth of the Asant to tell Bilaam, no, you're dealing with a people that's not like any other people, and not for the reasons you think they're unlike any other people. It's because they're people who relate to the creator of the world. How do we relate to him? The Pesach, Yetzias Mitzrayim, through Shavuos, Matan Torah, through Sukkos, the Hashgacha, the divine providence that protects us throughout our history. So our observance, our understanding of the Shalosh Regalim is really the best antidote to Bilaam's philosophy, and his attitude that really tries to foster assimilation. Those three holidays, of which, sad to say, only Pesach is widely observed amongst Jews, but those three holidays, the Shalosh Regalim, that represents our connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Right? Ata v'chatanu mikol amim, v'afta sonu, v'atzisa banu, v'ati ten Hashem l'keinu v'yavo, es, whatever it is, chag ha-matzah says, chag ha-shavua says, chag ha-sukkah says, v'ati ten lanu means that you gave it to us in order to cement, in order to strengthen our relationship. Okay, so they all get to where they're going to go, overlooking the Jewish people. We're now up to number 6, and here we have another medrash. Vayizbach Balak Bakar Vatzon Vayishlach Bilaam Lasrim Asherito. So Bilaam then, because he was directed by Balak, this is in Perek Chaf Pasuk Mem, Balak then brings offerings, cattle, sheep, he sends to Bilaam and the officers that were with Bilaam, and he does this, of course. You see the notes in the Medrash HaMavur says he does this because others did it as well. See, Yitzchak did it with Avimelech. Yaakov himself was Mizabeach with Lavan and the others. Achav later on. HaTzadikim Omrim Ma'at V'osim Harbeh. Tzadikim say very little and they do a lot. Like Avram. You have the story at the beginning of Parshas Vayera. Avram says to the angels, stay here and I'll make you a little bread. And then he goes and he says to Sar, Mari, Shlosh Sim Kemach Solas, Lush of Asugos, he brings him out an entire meal. He himself goes to grab the cattle to make prepare some meat for them. The evil, they say a lot, they don't even do a little. Alright? So the case we have in the Gemara B'Metzia Daf Pei Zayin is of Ephron Achite. It's a different Parshas Chayisara. But here Balak did the same thing. He said to Bilaam, Ki chabed achabedcha me'od, I'll give you tremendous honor. All right? But now, Kishabah, when he came to him, it's not enough that he didn't invite him to the Suda that he made in the Beis HaMelech, but he just said, but lo shiger lo ella bakar vatzon achas. Here he made an entire feast, a royal feast, but he sent to Bilaam one cattle and one sheep for all of Bilaam's entourage. His chil Bilaam chorek shinov. Bilaam started to grind his teeth. Shohisa nafsho rechava. Here they're having this entire repast, right? Something not uncommon to us, tremendous smorgasbord. You eat your heart's delight. Then a half hour later, another whole meal. That's the average wedding today. Eating 2-3 meals in one night. He said, Nafsha Rechava. He had exhaustive tastes. Amar, Kach Sholachli. This is what he sent me. Next to nothing. He's enjoying himself. Macharani Nasein Me'era. b'nechasav. Tomorrow I will curse his own belongings. Vahiva boker. Okay, now instead of just bringing all the offerings on one, sacrifice on one mizbeach, now you have to build seven, and he asks for Shiva Parim, Gedolim, Elim Gedolim, he asks for a tremendous amount. So what is this point? That we know the context of Ephron Achiti, that Tzadikim and Avram, Tzadikim, Omrim Harbeh, I'm sorry, Omrim Ma'at, Maseh Harbeh, by the way, it's a mission of us as well. Shammai and Mor Ma'at Vaseh Harbeh, and Rishayim Afilu Omrim Harbeh Vafilu Ma'at Enamosim. They say a lot, they promise a lot, they don't even do very little. Why should that be? So I heard from Rabbi Chait, very interesting pshat, that it's because the Rasha, when he speaks, he's not tied to the deed, he's tied to the response, to the reaction. He wants the acclaim of people who see him as a humanitarian, as a benefactor. They're looking for the response of the people, the public acclamation. They're not looking for the deed itself. The fulfillment of the deed itself is less interesting, and it's of low priority. I always get this feeling, you know, funerals, certainly non-Jewish funerals, but even unfortunately Jewish funerals with people not religious, there is the most common practice is just to leave the coffin at the grave. You ever see that? You leave the coffin at the grave and just move on. To actually bury the person, that is for the workers to do. We don't do that. I was once at a funeral, and the only person religious was one of the shul. None of the other relatives were. And I said, let's everyone bury together. And one of the siblings said to me, why don't we have the grave diggers do it? And that's why they're here. So I said, well, it's the last act of kindness we could do for someone, to actually bury them ourselves. It's our kindness to them. So she said to me, wow, that's a beautiful custom. Is that something new? I said, no, not quite. It goes back to the Talmud. It's an old Jewish custom, because it means it's not only what we're saying about the person, but actually what we're doing for the person as well. For someone like Avram, for Tzadik, and Mor Ma'at Vaseh Harbeh, their focus is on the deed. And the deed is for its own sake. It's chesed for its own sake. Not chesed for expedience, or chesed because they'll gain some benefit from it, or chesed because others will applaud them or honor them for it. It's chesed purely for the sake of chesed. So Avram said to his guests, I'll get you a little something to eat, and then he brought a lot. Because the main point in telling them he'll even get them pas lechem, they should stay. Stay. That's what he wanted. He wanted them to stay so that they should be the recipients of his kindness. The point was not to promise them and over-promise them a feast, because then it's already boasting. That's self-glorification. The rush is the exact opposite. That's why afilu ma'at einam osim. They don't even do a little. It's because the doing is not as significant as the amira. It's the amira which gains the acclaim. It's the amira which it gives them the satisfaction that a tzaddik gets from the act of chesed. That's the difference. It's just an insight into Bilam's personality, and really the personality of the Rasha versus the tzaddik. Okay, finally, one more, number seven. In Bilam's bracha already, we find here some of the most sublime praises of the Jewish people. Right, part of it entered the literature of Artila, Matovu Ohalecha Yaakov, Mishkan Osecha Yisrael, praise of the Jewish people, dwelling in our homes, in our sanctuaries. Then it goes on a little later. So this is not as famous as the other ones. In Om Kilavi Yakum, V'Chariz Nasa. This nation is like a lion cub that arises. A lion cub is a young lion. It will be exalted though like a lion itself. it will not rest until it consumes its prey. What did Bilam say about us? Listen to what he saw in us. Ein uma ba'olam kayotze bahem. There's no nation in the world like the Jewish people. Harei hein yishenim min ha-Torah min ha-Mitzvos. And sometimes the Jewish people are sleeping. And when we're sleeping, we are sleeping. We're not learning. We're not davening. We're not doing mitzvos. We're sleeping. Like a lavi, like a cub, like an infant you put to sleep. Ve'omdim mishnasam. Then we wake up. Karayos, like a lion. That's how the Shulchan Aruch begins, right? You should rise like a lion. As soon as we arise, v'chotven kriyat shema. Right away, we chap kriyat shema. We say shema. U'mamlichin l'kadosh baruch hu. And we crown God as the king. V'nasin ka'arayos. And then we start as a lavi, then we become like the ari. U'mafligin l'derech eretz l'masu matan. And we go off on our business, right? To work, earn a living. See, that just supports that. Im niskal echad mehem michulam, if a person stumbles, either in sin, or Mefarshim say stumbles because of some untoward event that comes, some harm threatens him physically, financially, oim mechablim boim ligab echad mehem, or mechabel comes, some terrorist, some source of harm comes, right away the Jew's response is once again to get back into the world of God's reality, and he says Shema. He says Shema. So at moments of great danger, Jewish people say Shema Yisrael Shem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. It's the very essence of our faith. Lo yishkav ad yochal teref, will not rest until we consume our prey. Kishu Omer Hashem Echad. So this Jew now, trying to overcome whatever danger he finds himself in, he says, Hashem Echad, ne'cholin ha-michablin mipanav. The terrorists, the destroyers, are consumed before him, and those destroyers themselves, melach ha-shin acharov, they whisper, Baruch Shem Kavod Machuso Le'olam Vaed. Blessed is the name of the glory of his kingdom forever and ever. Uvrachin. And they flee. V'hu nesmach b'kriyat shema. And he relies on Kriyat Shema Mishomre Hayom L'Shomre Halayla, from the watchman of the morning to the night. Ukshaboli Shan, when he goes to sleep again, Mafkid Rucho HaKadosh Baruch Hu Shenemar. This fragment we have in Adon Olam, Biyadcha Mafkid Ruchi. We entrust our spirit in your hand. Ukshininar, once again the cycle returns. When we again awaken, Mamlich HaKadosh Baruch Hu, again we crown God as the King. Hashomer Balayla, most of us are Shomer Hayom, and then there's another changing of the guard. Shenemar, Nafshi Lashem, Mishomer Boker, Shomer Boker. Again, there's always the Shomer that we have watching over us. But more to the point, the Shomer Mar is our Emuna. Lachain Bilam Omer, Eizo Umakazo. Is there a nation like this, like the Jewish people? What's the pshat? To see, rather than articulate the weakness of Klal Yisrael, Bilam extolled our strength. What's the strength of the Jewish people? Deep Emuna, abiding Emuna, Kriyat Shema, Torah, Mitzvos. It's a powerful attachment to Hashem that is manifested in 613 different ways, and in our very lives, the way we choose to live and educate our children, grandchildren, that is the Emun of the Jewish people. And the cycle of our lives is always that we wake up in the morning like Levi. We're young, there's a lot to do, and we have a whole day in front of us, and then the day comes, and there are takalas during the day, and the mechavim during the day, and things that distract us and divert us and impede us, and that's all true. But if before the Jews' mind's eye at all times is Hamlochas HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the day takes on a different dimension. And all the impediments of the day, all the obstacles, dissolve before us. And the night comes, and again, V'yadcha Afkid Ruchi, we again entrust ourselves to Hashem, and the next day arises, and the same process begins, Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, and another day in service of Hashem. That's what Bilam saw in the Jewish people. They are a unique people, a people that is bonded to HaKadosh Baruch Hu indelibly, intimately, and permanently. That's what he saw. That's the praise, the majestic praise he gave us. That's what he saw. That's what he said. Ezo umakazo. There really is no people like Klal Yisrael. Okay, I thank you very much.
Yeah.